Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi guys, welcome to Adulting. This is a podcast where we try to work out all the things we're supposed to know when we're supposedly grown up, but I don't really feel that grown up yet, even though I'm 24. And today I'm joined by Kojo.
Hey.
Good? Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. Still a bit hungover.
Yeah, but I know. We're both nursing slight hangovers, but it's fine. We'll get through it.
Probably adulting experience.
Yeah, exactly. So true. How cool are we that it's like 11:11 and we're up, out, and hungover? Okay. That is hashtag adulting for sure. So I got Kojo to send me over a little bio just so that and it's amazing. I'm actually just going to read it all out because it's really cool. So Kojo Apiaje, is that right? The Human is an experimental writer, poet, and social activist working for the housing and homelessness charity Shelter as a campaigner. Kojo mobilizes and organizes the public to help tackle the housing crisis faced by millions across the country in various forms. Having experienced sofa surfing for months on end, Kojo's work in housing is rooted in a deeply personal and emotional place. Outside of his work at Shelter, he produces his own podcast called Outliers X, need to listen to that, which discusses the weird and wonderful topics of fringe culture, a thriving monthly poetry night in Covent Garden's London called Painting Poetry. He can often be found in a corner somewhere, coding, reading, or writing about the awkward idiosyncrasy of what a great word of life. That is a really good word, yeah. And what it fundamentally means to be a human on this little ball of dirt and water that we call home. I love that last bit. That's so cute. Ball of dirt and water.
I wrote that as you asked me for a bite. I was like, shit, I need a bite. And then wrote it like at work. I think I'm going to start using that more often.
Yeah, I think you should. You just had that your tagline and all your emails.
Yeah.
And then everyone will be like, I'm so swag. So basically, one of the things that I wanted to like talk to Kojo about is part of growing up, obviously, not a lot of people, will have felt like growing up is all about kind of spreading your wings and becoming independent. But for quite a few people, you don't have that starting place where you've got a home above you, you've got food, you've got shelter, and you've got all of those basic necessities. So we kind of wanted to figure out what it's like growing up when actually your starting point is really different from other people in society, and how important it is for us, those people who haven't had these situations, to understand our privilege in that place, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to, like, what's your experience?
Yeah. Okay. So my experience, privilege is always an interesting concept because I'm always wary about getting into sort of the oppression Olympic side of it, where like I've dealt with my own issues and compared to other people who've dealt with their own issues, and there's always kind of levels to it, but everyone kind of deals with it quite differently. So from where I was born, I was born in like to a working class family. Had a home over my head for most of my life, and that was fine. I didn't really notice anything sort of negative coming from there as a child. Everything just felt perfect. I mean, you have nothing to compare it to, so you're like, this is just the standard. I think I didn't really realize my own, it's just how difficult things were for myself or my family until about 2015 when we lost our home. And ended up in temporary accommodation, and I was staying on my grand's couch and my auntie's couch and in spare rooms and different things like that, where it hit me that how important it is to have a home in that way. I was self-serving for about maybe from March of 2016 to November of 2016, which is when I officially got my first job at adult job at Shelter, and was able to actually like start renting a place for myself.
So how old were you when?
I was 24.
Okay, same as me.
I was 24, and I think the most difficult part of that experience was really trying to. I mean, have you heard like Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
No, tell me.
I don't want to butcher this, but basically it's a psychological principle about to achieve our for human to achieve their fundamental potential to be like happy in quotations, yeah. There's a certain hierarchy of things which need to be met before that happiness can be achieved.
Right
at the bottom is basically what we all need, which is sort of food, shelter, security. Like that's the basic things people yeah. need. And then above that you have like social needs of like social interaction, and you have things like I don't know, you feel fulfilled or just other like a step
yeah.
towards that happiness. But the fact that at the bottom of what we fundamentally need is like shelter, security, food, safety, kind of stuff. So for me not to have one of those fundamental blocks
yeah.
was it fundamentally flips your entire life. And actually I feel extremely just grateful in a way that I wasn't homeless up on the street. I think a lot of people think homelessness is just street homelessness when it's much more than that. Mm. And I wasn't on the street. I was sofa surfing. I had a roof over my head the entire time, but because it wasn't a stable environment, that it took up the bulk of my energy and time at that period. It was difficult to deal with.
I think that's really interesting. When I met with Becky, who also works for Shelter Watch, she was explaining to me, she was like, what people don't realise is that, you know, people sometimes might see someone who they think is homeless and they're like, oh, they definitely live somewhere. Yeah. That's not the same as having a home. Like, having a house and having a home are two really different things. Different. And, like, you're a very normal guy. Just meet you and day-to-day life and probably, like, make friends and think yeah. it's completely normal. I would never realise, coming from my privileged position, that you could have been in a place where you literally feel like you don't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
And that would be so unsettling. And I think what we appreciate is people understand homelessness when they see it on the street, but they don't realise that to be at risk of homelessness, I think it's you just have to be spending more than 40% of your income, isn't it, on your yeah, rent. Yeah. And that puts you at risk of homelessness, which is lots of people who worked in like public sector jobs, so like nurses, teachers, etc. It's a massive problem that doesn't just affect these people inside that we think are other, because it's not an othering thing.
It isn't. It
can happen to anyone.
Yeah, I think that's You never believe it will happen to you until it actually does. Until yeah. you know someone who like until you personally know someone who's connected to you. I think there is that sense of othering of, oh, it's those people or it's that. There's a certain type of person. Really, it can be anyone yeah. at any time. I think at Shelter we've done like one of our campaigns we were running was really to tackle some of the stigma around welfare, and just some of the interviews and just general sentiments we and conversations we had with people across the country. I think there's a sense that welfare or benefits is currently looked at as being like people see it as the deserving and undeserving. So, or people more see it as a system which is abused and the scroungers are on benefits and et cetera, et cetera. Like the person, the stereotypical person with like 21 kids or something like that,
yeah.
like taking money from the state. Which is, I mean, I'm not going to come and say that doesn't exist, but it's in terms of, like, there are so many people who need it and are receiving it and work extraordinarily hard and work multiple jobs, and people who just use it to keep afloat but are just working supremely hard and don't get the coverage that they need.
Really. It's a really weird thing in the media, like with this victim blaming thing, because it happens also with like victims of rape. They'll always kind of, there's always this argument that like, oh, the women make it up or yeah. like, and actually it's, I think it was something like, not, I'm going to get this stat completely wrong, but it's the tiniest figure of rape allegations are proved to be false.
Yeah.
But for some reason that's what sticks.
I think it's like 4 out of 100 or something.
Yeah, it's like 4%. Yeah, which I think if when we're talking about this, it rings exactly the same with this benefits idea. It's like, oh, they're taking our money, and it's just the oppressor.
Yeah.
Like in the situation, if it is a man raping a woman, that the male oppressor with the privilege is the one going, no, it's not me, and the wealthy people are saying, oh, we don't want to give our money away. And we really need to change this idea of like entitlement.
Yeah.
And like why people don't want to pay taxes is beyond me. Like this kind of idea that we need to like hoard money.
Yeah,
it's so weird.
It's strange. I think about this a lot because I'm wondering like how do you even tackle that? I feel like is a fundamental issue in just the monetary like capitalist system.
Yeah,
in,
it's capitalism.
Which rewards like greed, so people don't want to give. And I don't. I was like, okay, so if that's the issue, I'm thinking, okay, how do we change that? How do we change entitlement? And I still don't know the answer.
I think it's really difficult. I think like in the really top echelons of society where people are really super privileged, that's going to be hard to tackle. But what we need to do is, and I noticed you said it in your bio, like human. We need to humanize people.
Mm.
Like I think it starts at, like I've said this before on the podcast, but you know, on the tube when they play that thing, like beggars and buskers are operating on this tube. Please don't. And I'm like, they are not. The tube's going like, you're not human. Everyone sat there on their £700 iPhone and won't look up. Yeah. That idea, they put things on park benches to stop people being able to sleep.
Yeah.
How are we, as like just general humans, also everything is luck. I happened to be born into a family that happened to give me certain things. I didn't deserve this. Yeah. There's no reason that I've got it other than like luck.
Yeah.
So we need to start looking at everyone and realizing that someone's had some really shit luck, someone's had some good luck. Homeless people on the street and homeless people in any kind of situation are not... they're the same as you. I think that's where it needs to start. It's just being more empathetic and just realizing that we're all on the same page. I don't know. It's so hard.
Yeah, it's very tricky. I think you hit the nail on the head with the whole making it. We need to make humans more human, like in a way. And just going about doing that is an interesting one because I feel like the people who are already bought into this issue already understand that. It comes down to luck. At the end of the day, you see someone begging, you can understand that. Like, and we're all a few bad decisions away, or a few unfortunate decisions away from ending up in the same place, kind of thing. But but whilst we recognise that, there's a large portion of society who see it as, oh, they made that choice, they put themselves there, they can pull themselves up by the bootstrapping. Is that, which is really archaic mentality, I think. I don't want to demonise anyone, but like the baby boomer generation, or like generations before the pre-war generation, who see like that hard graft, or you can work yourselves out of these issues, which, to be honest, you can work yourself out of many issues, but not everything fits into that box of pull yourself
especially
up
when it's a structural thing. So if you're put in a position where structurally you actually can't even get to the place where you could get a job, and also when people see people on the street who maybe look like they're inebriated, they're taking drugs or whatever, and they're like, oh, that's why they're there. A lot of the time people on the streets are drinking and taking drugs because they live on the freaking street.
Exactly. You live on the street. I mean, at the end of the day,
people who don't live on the streets take drugs and drink. So like, why would you not do it if you're on the freaking... I don't understand that mentality. I find that so weird. It's like, obviously really you're going to want to try and elevate your situation in any way you can.
This is something that, like, an issue I've dealt with is working in for a housing charity. I'm doing this to help people that might be on the street or people who need houses and whatnot. So I'm helping in a way. And I spoke to a colleague about whether we should be giving money to homeless people on the street because they might just go and spend it on drugs or drink and whatnot. Like, are we making the situation worse is really what I was driving at. And then I think she made a really good point where she's like, at the end of the day, if you're on the street, you're on the street. Yeah. Like, you, if your life's a bit shit and you want to drink the pain away or whatnot, or you want to, it's your money. Like, it's not up to me to then make that decision and say, and to judge you and say, okay, you shouldn't do this because, like, I'm here with a hangover. Like, I was drinking for absolutely no reason. I'm not perfect. And it's wrong for me, like, we talk about privilege a lot, to come in a certain position of, you shouldn't be doing that. So I'm going to judge you in this way. I think you mentioned a point about, I think it was about how we view people in certain like difficult situations or really understanding that like an unfortunate situation can lead you to where you are or not. And when I was living in temporary accommodation, like a really shitty hostel with my mum and my brother back in 2016 for about 2 months, I had to, number one, the room was probably smaller than this living room now, and it's for the three of us. We had a bunk bed and a double bed, a chest of drawers, a table which was constantly leaning, the floor was uneven, a bar stool which had the cushion peeling off it. And a wardrobe which fell and narrowly missed my mum.
Oh my God.
It just wasn't a nice place. But that general building was shared by about 15 other groups of people, some single men with drug issues, some families with four kids.
Was that you were paying to stay in the hostel?
Yeah, you have to pay. It was like you pay like a reduced sum.
Is it for people who have housing issues?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's only for people with housing issues. So you can basically everyone we spoke about how like anyone can be a few steps away from being in like a difficult situation. Yeah. everyone is in those sort of places, and it's not great to be a single mum raising a child and then have to deal with someone who actively has drug issues and maybe like a violent history and stuff like that. And not saying anything's wrong with that person, but those two groups necessarily shouldn't be in that same environment all the time. And that's just one, we're talking about one hostel, this is all across the country. So I had to watch like my brother during that time like revise for his SATs and his exams on the table and listen to like the neighbour screaming and all sorts going on at the time. And just watching him go through that was difficult, because I already knew how difficult it was for me to process, like, as an adult, I'm thinking as a child, what is that really doing to him, to revise for exams. Yeah. And then now, if we say we jump to now, like, imagine how someone in a really difficult situation now could have been affected by things like that in their past. But obviously, we don't see that. We don't understand this, and we don't know what they've gone through. But that's one thing which is kind of, it put me in the mindset of, okay, let's take a step back and give people the benefit of the doubt. And,
100%. I mean, so. But you're so right. You never really think about that. Because the other thing is, I think the homelessness that we're affronted with often are the people who are maybe intoxicated. And we don't generally see the single mothers or women and things, because they don't generally probably put themselves on the streets and in other situations. And I think that's where, because as a society we do deem people that look a certain way as other, we then can really easily kind of separate ourselves from, well, they're homeless and we're not, and they're different. Whereas I think if we could see people like your mum and you and really get like humanize it, and I know it shouldn't take that to make it a difference, but it does, unfortunately, a lot of the time we have to be able to assimilate or see ourselves in someone to be able to feel that empathy and recognize that actually that could be anyone.
I think that's one thing Shell tries to do with a lot of our campaigns is when we're launching a campaign, when we're pushing like a certain a general campaign to change government's policy or something along those lines, we always try and put our service users or just people at the forefront of the campaign. We try to really show how it's not always the sharpest end, it's not always the person who has had the hardest issue in to deal with in life, because at the end of the day, there are millions of people dealing with housing issues across the country, and we all relate to each other. So it's important to kind of show those stories and say like, you aren't the only person experiencing this, and to make those stories believable and realistic, we're not going to show the hardest hitting story, because that's the most emotionally grabbing. But we show, no, this is a common thing, and this person also experienced housing issues just like you, and really trying to put those stories at the forefront and humanize them.
I think there's a really other, like, the whole other side of it is shame. I think like there's so many people probably in society who have really normal jobs and are like literally killing themselves to be able to afford their rent, but it's like seen as kind of embarrassing to not be able to get by, and I don't know if that's the kind of bourgeois culture's made worse by social media and flashiness and everyone kind of having this like aspirational idea to be like living your best life. And I don't know if that pressure means that people then are also, this capitalist idea makes you want to have more, and then you're just struggling to even, like you said, you're not fundamentally providing those happiness, those relationships, and just the real things that matter rather than a new top or whatever it is. Do you know what I mean?
The idea of shame is interesting to me, because that's one thing I dealt with as well. It's only recently I've become comfortable kind of talking about the experience. At the time, I told nobody. No one, not like my best friend or anyone. I lied about how we ended up in that situation. Even now, I'm not completely comfortable talking about the entire story, but there's a sense of shame, and I'm just thinking about where that comes from. It's a weird one.
Well, I think it's probably a little bit in the narrative of the way that we say that you're supposed to have, like, even when I was younger, I think if like my parents had an argument, I'd be like embarrassed about that, because you're told that you're supposed to have this perfect family, everyone's supposed to get on, you're supposed to have and I think it's in literature, I think it's in films, I think everything that you see isn't dysfunctional, it's perfect. So I'm not surprised as a child, especially when every book you read is Goldilocks or whatever, you know, it's all about having a home, having a family. So no wonder as a kid, or like even not you aren't a kid, but being younger, you're assimilating information, you're like, this isn't what it's meant to be. You've never been told anything else.
The fun thing about that is, though, in all those stories, all the main characters always went through a really tough time.
Actually,
situation. It ended up happy. You always get a happy ending in the end. But they always went through a really tough time, and I think maybe this just comes from the whole, like, as a human, we really see the present and the past. We can't really see the future. You don't see the entire journey ahead of you. So whilst you may get the happy ending, as far as you know right now, the present is the ending, and this is a shit situation, so you can only judge it based on that. Because I'm just wondering, like, all those stories, they all all right. the characters all end up in a real, like Cinderella was being abused and whatnot.
Yeah.
Actually, random. I heard the original Cinderella story was a lot darker than the Disney.
No, I haven't heard what happens, but I've heard someone say that time ago.
It was all I know is I think the stepsisters all when they were looking for Cinderella with the glass slipper, and they're trying to slip her on different people to see if it was her or see if it was a princess or what. I can't remember the story.
Yeah,
but they were chopping off people's feet.
If it didn't,
it was dark. Like really,
those,
dark.
You know, you said that it's so true because it's like Sleeping Beauty is really dark as well.
Yeah, even that Hans, that Jack and Jill felt like Jack and Jill fell down and then got really like they broke his crown and anyway. So it's around
the that's true. Okay, so maybe my point is a bit redundant about the happy family thing. You just got that completely wrong.
Yeah, but not at all. But it's an interesting idea of like still of trying to unpack where we had this idea that everything should be great and we're not allowed to experience rough times because there's a fundamental like cloud of shame which comes to especially housing issues, especially the idea that you should be able to provide for yourself. And at the time I felt while I was dealing with my own issues, but like I can now look back and see just think about how my mum must have been dealing with it in a sense of almost failure around that of not being able to provide and whatnot. And just looking at your peers and seeing that everyone else seems to be handling things fine. But
that's the other funny thing though, because you've got this, or not funny, but like the odd thing is that you might feel shameful, so you're not telling anyone, so no one really knows what's going on.
Sure, yeah.
It's not spoken about. It's just it's a very weird way of kind of like appeasing everyone.
Yeah,
it's almost like you can't talk about things that are uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and that was like another thing I think we were
a British thing, if anything.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like British people feel uncomfortable talking about like what we earn as like in terms of paychecks or just things which might make someone slightly uncomfortable. It's like you see weird things on the train. You're like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't say them. Just keep my head down and kind of focus on what I'm focusing on. But yeah, I just think it's a very core part of British culture. Just keep your head down and mind your business.
Yeah, that is very true.
So.
But yeah, another thing we were going to kind of talk about is like growing up, like those growing pains, that self-introspection, learning who you are in society. Because I had this when I suddenly realised about my privilege.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you get a front and at first you're like, this is weird. No, that can't be right. I haven't just been doing this. But you realise that, I said something before on another podcast, it was like, you're not just your actions, your inactions as well. So I never thought that I was actively oppressing anyone or actively being racist or actively being homophobic or anything like that. But structurally, the way that my life works, I am kind of, by proxy, doing things that put other people in a shitter situation.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Can you
so like,
explain a bit?
Just by the fact that I might get like ahead of someone else in my career, for instance, because I'm white, because everything, the industry is whitewashed, doesn't mean that I'm necessarily better than a friend who's a woman of colour.
Yeah.
But just, so I need to be platforming more women of colour in order to try and like help people to understand that we need more platforming.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
So it wasn't that I wasn't doing anything wrong, but by proxy of not kind of seeing that my whiteness was allowing me to have more opportunities, that is in and of itself still being a little bit oppressive.
Mm.
You know, so it's like that saying, equality to the privilege feels like oppression, because you realise that you've actually got to step down and that's a way of helping. So that kind of, to me, was part of my self-introspection and growing pains and realising, like, I need to do more. To feel really comfortable in myself now, I can't just watch things happen. Like even like changing my language, so I won't say things like retard or gay or like stuff that you'd say when I was younger, and I thought it was fine.
Yeah,
and you have to readdress that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I'm trying to think of my own growing pains. I don't know. Like I said, when we emailed and I made a point, I was a very weird kid growing up. Like a really strange kid. I used to dye my hair. Like I had an afro and I dyed it all red. And I used to wear like a jester hat with bells on it and things like that.
I love that.
Yeah, it was. I don't know why. But so this is like, it's quite different from what, you
mentioned
about. About like platforming and stuff. But I feel like. There's a sense of growing up of trying to figure out what your role is in society or mm. as a person. Being a teenager, is you're almost in a really tricky space of recognizing you're not, for A, you're not an adult. You know that, plain and simple, but you understand adult issues, or you have some some understanding of adult issues, so you feel like you should be in that space, but you can't. So it's really trying to craft your identity. I spent a while just doing weird like shit. Like I was like emo. Do you remember the term like emo? Yeah. I was like a New York kid, so I used to be into like a lot of heavy metal and dark stuff, and every life was pain and everything. Well, not really, but that's the kind of mentality you walk around with. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, okay, what is my role? What kind of person I want to be?
Yeah.
What kind of identity do I want to craft for myself? And it's interesting being now reflecting on that, seeing that a lot of other teenagers and a lot of people and that were doing kind of similar things. And I mean, you look back now at like your pictures from back then, you're like, oh, what the fuck was I doing?
But I think it's funny because when you're a teenager, everything is about you. It's about like, who am I? What? And then I think what happens is you start to adult, you go up and you're like, oh, how is this affecting other people? I think that's what it's kind of getting at. It's like when I was a teenager, it's all about, I want everyone to like me. I'm such an attention seeker. Like the really annoying one in the class, it's always a class clown. But I couldn't understand why this was a bad thing. I'd be like, why are you annoyed? This is so funny. Yeah. And then now you suddenly, I think that suddenly when you go up and you look back, and you're like, oh my God, I was such an arsehole. Yeah. Why was I doing that?
Yeah.
Because I think that's what happens when you grow up. You suddenly start to see that actually, because when you're a kid, that is, everything is about you. Like
fundamentally,
you're being looked after. And suddenly I think what happens is that growing pains, that change, is just realizing that, wow, actually my actions are going to have a consequence, not just for me, but for other people. And then I guess that elevates again when you have children, because then you suddenly, nothing is about you.
Yeah. Do you remember the moment where you began to realise like your actions had consequences, or like you had privilege or anything? Do you remember?
No, I can't really remember. I know that in my last year of uni, I really started to kind of, I got a bit like, think I didn't really like myself. I suddenly was like, who am I, what am I doing? I was I was in a relationship that didn't really work, and I suddenly got like, it really hurt, but I like started writing a diary about all the things that I did, and like if I had an argument with someone or if I said something, and I was like, why am I being so negative? And I kind of made an active choice, and it was like painful. It's the weirdest thing. It really like hurt. It's really difficult. Like I just saw myself and was like, what are you doing? Like you need to change the way you're looking. I would get upset about things and like be really negative and brave, like feel like I was a victim, and I wasn't. I was just making everything about myself, and I suddenly realised that I need to stop kind of victim blaming. And from then I felt so positive and life's been so much better.
Yeah.
It's funny though, it took that kind of time to really see.
Yeah, you almost have to go through the worst parts of it to come out the other side. But I mean, it's come down to that cliche phrase, always darkest before the dawn, and you have to see bottom, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, no, I just always find it interesting, kind of, that period of growth usually comes through the times when you feel the worst.
Yeah, and for sure.
You can sort of reflect on it and say, you know what, I want to do something slightly different. And then you just kind of rock it on from that point on.
Yeah,
so I just find that interesting.
No, it's interesting. And it's, but then the other thing is, so, like, again, I'm talking about this, but it's all very, like, conceptual and easy, and I don't have any mental health issues or, like, any mental illness. So for me, I could go through a patch where I felt like I was a bit down and then come out the other side and be absolutely fine. But what, and also I have those, it makes so much sense now you talked about that. What was that levels thing called?
Maslow's hierarchy.
Yeah, now that makes so much sense, because I've never had any issues with where I'm going to live. Yeah. That's done. I know that I've got security for my family. Fine.
Yeah.
So obviously, I'm only ever really fiddling with that top bit, which is like whatever the most superfluous thing on the top of that triangle is.
Yeah.
So I'm probably always going to be able to bounce back.
Yeah.
And I think understanding that lots of people, like, as you say, that bottom rung can actually be taken out really easily. You don't know. You could, like, if someone could be paid really well and they make a bad business decision and then lose their job, that could be them. But also you don't normally see, what I find interesting with homelessness, sorry, just going off a tangent, you don't normally see someone who looks like they've just become homeless. Do you know what I mean? It almost seems like they're a seasoned street liver.
Yeah, it does. It's only yesterday or 2 days ago where I thought I saw somebody who just became homeless, and I was able to kind of deduce that because they had so many bags and suitcases and things beside them. But like you said, like looking at them, they were sleeping. I'm not going to like judge them, but looking at them, they were like the clothes they were wearing made them seem like they'd been on the street for a while. But they had so much stuff, and I'm thinking like, that's just when it hit me that day. I was like, wait, I don't think you've ever really seen someone who's just become homeless. And I think a lot of it goes back to the idea of shame. I think once you do your often trying to hide and to not make it seem so obvious. And
then eventually once you, because you also, it is dehumanizing, because that's so true. Like, it's probably only, you're only comfortable being on the streets really when you've got to that point of such desperation where you're like, I actually need to, which is why when people are like,
when you reach a point like, fuck it.
When people are like, oh, they're begging, they're probably like earning money, they've probably got a house. It's like, you, even if they've got a massive house down the road, I don't need to sit on the street and beg to earn money.
Yeah.
So if they feel like they have to do that, which can't be enjoyable for anyone.
Absolutely.
And you can't have like lots of friends and family because people would reckon, do you know? So you must be really displaced from society to be able to do that or be in such a dark place. And I've just realised a bit of prejudice that I've had myself. Like, if someone comes up to me as a beggar or begging and they're wearing really new clothes, in my head, I'm
like, no, they're not homeless.
But I've just realised, how do I know they haven't literally just come onto the streets or someone's bought them? Like, how does that make any sense?
Feeling like you have to look the part of
So maybe that's the other reason why they look serious. They've done that because people don't get to tell anything if they've got new clothes on.
I've spoken to so many homeless people who talk about how no one speaks to them. The whole dehumanizing thing is interesting because, like, if I can't give money, I thought, let me at least ask you how you're doing.
See
how you do. The other day, I went and brought, I was on the way to go and see my grandma, and I stopped by. It was really hot. Like, it's one of definitely one of the hottest days we've had of this heat wave. And I went to Sainsbury's and saw a homeless guy that was just like sitting outside. Went inside, bought him a bottle of water and gave it to him. And then he looked up and was like, oh, thank you. I was like, got to kind of conversation, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. And he said, this is his birthday today. And I was like, oh my God. And he felt really, you could see, like, he seemed happy that I gave him the water, but he looked really down. He's like, what a way to spend the birthday. And was like, I was like, wow. But he was like, people don't do these things.
This is what I do. I do sit in chat. There's a girl called Karma who I love. She gets really angry with everyone, but she really likes me. She's always walking like down the road, like near where I live.
Yeah.
Every freaking day I give her a pound. She never remembers. She's like, babe. I'm like, babe, I gave her a pound yesterday. And I stand and chat to her and I'm like, we've made really good progress. She likes me because I'm smiling. I think she gets quite shouty if people are like, but we were like, fair enough, like, why not? I always just smile at her, so she's like, all right babe, all right babe. She's like, give me money. I'm like, babe, I literally gave you a pound yesterday, but fine. But then other people I see, she gets really annoyed because they're being fucking rude. And do you know what, she should, like, you should be able to just, I just don't, also London people don't smile anyway. I smile at someone on the tube and they go off the next stop.
Like, what? You think they did on purpose? Like,
I'm not even joking. I'm half Irish, so this is why I'm so friendly to my mum literally is like, hi, on the tube. Everyone's like, whoa.
I like people like that. You don't see them enough. No. It's like a nice bit of energy. I mean, in London people are just miserable and depressed. So
I always chat to old people because they'll talk to you, and everyone else on the tube will be like, what the hell is she doing? I sat there and had such a great chat with this old guy the other day. Had a really cool suit on. He's telling me how he'd like love poetry, he's going to see his mates. He was so interesting. Everyone on the tube was sat there as if I'd just been like a massive fart or something. They're like, who is this girl? Get off. Like,
it seems okay. I mean,
seems like you've got something wrong with you.
Yeah, people are strange. I don't know, just London culture and just not wanting to, instead just wanting to keep to yourself, But like, talking to people, which I like meeting wacky people, so talking to people, just people in general, with something to say is always interesting.
It's so interesting. Yeah. But I really wonder, like, if we put in, even if it wasn't like you say, like, if we didn't have the money to fund the housing and all the things, if everyone just kind of got together, imagine if every street was like every Friday, we're just going to, everyone bring down some food and we're just going to cook it up, and everyone who's not got a house, like, why do we not do stuff like that? That would just make so much sense.
I'm going to write that down, but it would.
It would just be such an easy, imagine if there was like a national rule that every Friday everyone had to like bring down thing of beans and just all get like a barbecue. Like, I just don't.
Yeah, I don't know why.
There's so many small little things. If collectively you did stuff, it would be so much easier.
Yeah, you know what? I think the reason stuff like that doesn't happen is often due to fear of culpability in some way. It's like, because I mean, that would be great if we said, okay, you know, fuck it, everyone just bring down food and we'll just prepare food and whatnot.
Yeah.
Then you get into a whole discussion of, oh, what about the health standards?
Oh, what if it's off?
Yeah. I mean, granted, that is definitely something worth addressing, but yeah, you just end up on like, I don't want to be at fault. It's not going to do anything. But you're right, that stuff should happen.
So look, the other really interesting thing that I spoke to Becky about was, she was saying how a lot of people think, like, I was saying that, like, if we didn't have to fix the housing problem, but even when the housing, so people are like, oh, they've gone into housing, it's fine.
Yeah.
She made such an interesting point to me, which I hadn't really thought about. She was like, even if you get a homeless person into housing, if you're like a 40-year-old man who's been homeless for like 3 years, and before that you had a career, someone just shoves you in a house and is like, live here, you're actually going to probably just be like, no, actually, do you know what? It takes so much away from you.
There's a lot of institutionalization which comes with being homeless, especially on the street. In fact, I think there's a few people outside of Shell's head office who are sleeping on the street, and people often come and knock on our doors and say, like, someone just took, like, your shelter, what are you doing? Someone just goes to the street sleeping rough. And but we know these people. I think Becky's actually the person who like told me about like their stories and whatnot.
Yeah.
And she often goes and talks to them, and the guy and the guy, often the people there just don't want he's very, I wouldn't say happy. I can't say.
But you, I guess, like, you adjust.
Adapt. It's very well adapted and very well adjusted, and it's fine to be in that situation. And I think that comes from when you're on the street for years and years at a time. It's not impossible. It becomes very difficult to then, like I said, to put someone at home and say, okay, now live here, because this is, as far as like they can see, this is a very new environment. This is something I'm not used to, and this isn't what I'm familiar with.
But the other weird thing is, so we've. Structurally, and there's people, we other these people, and we're like, this isn't, they're not us, we're not going to speak to them, we don't want to give them money, they're this. And then suddenly you're like, oh, well, we'll fix your problem, but you've spent years kind of conditioning them to believe that they are not the same as you, that these people are fundamentally not worth your time. But then to fix the problem, because most of the issue is a lot of people with privilege are just affronted that they're seeing it, they just don't want to see it because it reminds you, probably makes you feel guilty, or you're just like, do you know what, I don't want that on my street, I don't want that in my borough, or whatever. So then you can't suddenly have that attitude and then be like, oh, actually, we're just going to make you go in a, you just go in a house now and we'll pay for it. Like, that is so deep. And I think it is this problem that people just don't realise. It could be your mum, your dad, your sister, it could be you.
Anyone.
And you are not going to feel like, how comfortable would you feel with feeling like you're kind of like a stray and someone's trying to put you in a box?
Yeah, you wouldn't. I think so much, I suppose so much of homelessness and housing issues are intrinsically linked to mental health issues. So you can't just take someone off the street and put them in a house and say, okay, you got home, you're fine now, because there's a lot of mental health issues which you then need to unpack and to help. One thing Shelter does, which is probably my favorite part of the job, which I'm not even involved in, I just love hearing about it, is our services often provide more than just housing advice. So whilst like people might call up the helpline and Shelter helps like millions of people on the phone and whatnot, there's we have various hubs or offices across the country where people can go in and have like a more of a one-to-one experience. And then in those experiences, they can receive things like DIY help, like learning how to paint your house or something like that. If you're living in a place of bad conditions, there's a huge wealth of Shelter service provision dedicated to helping women that have experienced domestic abuse issues. Like so many, like one issue, which wasn't even on my radar when we talk about privilege, but is when you hear about it, it's like needing to be trained on how or taught how to have a bank, how to like control over your finances, because a lot of say women coming from domestic abusive relationships weren't in control of their money and have and then now once you've. Have that freedom and have that ability. You're like, okay, I don't know what. How do you open a bank, kind of stuff? So Shelter provides that kind of help, and obviously like signposting to mental health organisations like Mind and various things, because housing is never just a housing issue. It's always much deeper than that. Whether you're talking about access to employment, or you're talking about like mental health issues, or you're talking about childcare or domestic abuse, there's always other paradigms involved in that.
Yeah,
and I think. One thing Shell, I don't think Shell talks about it enough, but that's one thing.
That's amazing. Really, it's so true. It's just like those basic things, like that you just forget. It's just we go from one. It's literally we see the extremes. We go like someone who's very like been on the street for ages, and we just want to put them in the home, and no one's looking at that interim period where it's like, how are you going to take someone that's been conditioned to this to change? And it's true, like how to paint your house or how to do just basic, what we would deem as basic things.
How to cook an egg. It used to annoy me when I was going to uni and like living in certain houses, and I had a housemate who didn't know how to boil an egg, and it really pissed me off for some reason at the time. I don't know why, but I think that's more because I saw that as laziness. But there are people out there who, like I said, who just fundamentally do not, never had those basic skills, and can maybe take it back to their own childhood. Maybe their parents didn't teach them, and it's kind of, you reach a point where you're not just going to suddenly get up and start learning how to boil an egg. A lot of people.
The other thing I was thinking about is so random, but I went to get a coil, TMI yesterday, like a contraception thing. And she was like, oh, can you just write your name down on the piece of paper? And I thought to myself, I wonder, what if someone can't write? And then what, would you just like leave that situation? Because the other thing is, like we're talking about the shame thing, if someone can't do something, a lot of the time people are like, well, why don't you just ask for help? And it's like, that's actually really embarrassing in a society where there's certain things you're expected to know how to do, like cook certain foods or how to get the bus or how to write, how to read. And if you can't read or write or do certain things, which if your parents have been homeless and you've been then put in shelter or you haven't had care, there's so many things where we're not, that like society isn't ready to kind of cater for those those things. And I just randomly thought about it. I've never really thought about it before. I just thought about it yesterday. I'd, like, I just wonder if someone couldn't write, like, what would you do?
This is why there's such a big push for accessibility and inclusivity in a different way, where it's not just about having the capability to help, but about proactively trying to reach out to people. Because if you don't proactively make the effort, it's extremely difficult for someone to say, help me. We, I mean, there's pride and shame, and there's a feeling of I should be able to do this myself. And if you're not proactively trying to reach out to people to help them, then they just won't do it at all, or it just won't be done. And I think there's, when we talk about power dynamics and oppression and privilege and everything else, if you are in a position of power, you should be making that effort to platform and to help.
Yeah.
And
So in terms of with shout, like, what, how do we as a population, like, what's something that everyone can do, like, whether you've got money or whether you've got privilege or whatever, what's something just like,
I mean, fundamentally, to be taught to people, just look at people as a human, don't judge them, don't come at them with any sort of hidden intentions, or even if you're trying to help, just fundamentally just approach people on a person-to-person basis. Ask them what they want, ask them like how they're doing. I think that's one thing anyone and everyone can do, is just treat each other like actual, you know, human people. And that sounds probably corny to say, but I think it just comes down to just being nice. I think other than that, I'm not going to advise people to either give money or to give money to, give money to homeless people, give money to charities, because I think there's so many ways that you can unpack that, and some people view each as better than the other and whatnot. But I say it's, if you just talk to people, really.
And what about if someone is on the cusp or feels like they're in trouble with their own housing or and is scared to talk about it, or do you have any advice about what someone could do in that situation?
I'd suggest definitely getting in touch with Shelter. Shelter has an advice helpline which runs, I don't think it's 24/7, but it runs for like ridiculous hours, like on Christmas Day and things. So as housing issues crop up, I'd just give them a call. It's a free helpline. The helpline does get extremely busy, so a lot of people won't get through on the first try, maybe not the second try. But I'd urge people, like, if you're experiencing an issue, to make that call. It's one thing I didn't do at the time. Well, I did, but I didn't get through to anyone, and I kind of took it as, like, okay, I'm just not going to try. And that probably caused more harm than good in the long term, because I think Shelter probably could have helped us out massively. In fact, definitely could have helped us out at the time. So I'd imagine, if you're dealing with a housing issue or an issue which is, like I said, it's not necessarily housing focused, but it's related to housing or is causing an impact on your housing, give Shelter a call or seek out another charity which can help.
And I imagine as well, it's not about, like, you don't have to be like in imminent crisis. I think what Shelter's amazing is it's saying we want to prevent. So I feel like the thing that I didn't really get or didn't really understand is that actually a better way of tackling things would be get in there when, probably when you're at the height of your shame, because when it's just on the cusp of happening, that's probably when you're in a place where you're like fitting quite well into society and you're really feeling like I cannot let this break. But I think that's probably when you really should just be like, actually, I might need a bit of help, and there's no shame in saying that.
Yeah, there's absolutely no shame. And it's one thing I really wish we can tackle more as a culture is I'm being very hypocritical, because that's one thing I have an issue with, is asking for help anyways. But
but everywhere it's entrenched within us. It's
completely entrenched. And but I think as a culture, it's also this is a helpline, it's a private call, so I think people should feel much more easier about kind of say I need help, or can you advise me? But yeah, like you said, Shelter has a much more preventative stance to like, let's stop you becoming homeless, or like let's fix this before it gets any worse than it is. So yeah, I'd urge anyone with housing issues or budding housing issues, or just seeking out advice, it's a free helpline. Use those services.
It's amazing. I've literally learned so much talking to you, and I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this has been a really good conversation.
Really good. So if people want to know more about you, where can we find you? Or you don't want them to find you. I don't
No, they can't find me. You can find me on like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook as Kojo Stein, KOJOSTEIN. Cool. That's my writer's name.
Nice.
On my podcast, Outliers X, and Poetry and I run Painting Poetry. Yeah, in Covent Garden.
I really want to come along to that.
It's so much fun.
Oh, I love spoken word poetry because that's what you do as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So much fun, and we combine it with like one of our co-host is an actor, so he does like a theoretical kind of edge. It's amazing.
When's your next event?
We had one on Thursday just gone, but the next one will be on the third. It's always on the third Thursday of every month.
Okay.
So I think the next Thursday in August, the third Thursday is 16th of August.
Okay.
I think.
Cool.
But if not, the third Thursday of every month, Painting Poetry on the platforms.
That sounds fab. I want to come along. Yeah, well, thank you so much. This has been amazing.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.